rain is pouring down here on the Bugatti circuit at Le Mans.
Oh, Lorenzo just had a little bit of a moment. Has he got away? And someone has crashed down there. Randy De Puglia.
Hello, and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 320 for Wednesday, the 23rd of May, 2012. My name is Jules Cisek. I'm in California, and with me is Martin Darlington in somewhere in Wales.
I am indeed, and we're having a bit of a heat wave here, although I've woken up this morning and it's foggy, because I always like to start with a weather check. I know people worry about the weather in the Europe.
And you... You're coming off an evening of drinking a lot of this, yes. Right?
Yes. The best I can do this morning is I'm drinking coffee out of a Guinness mug. But yes, we had friends around for barbecue yesterday, and it was great fun.
Right.
There was some drinking.
So we had an interesting weekend at MotoGP, which we'll be talking about. And we also have a interview that Jim did with Mark Miller that we'll play a little bit later on. Unfortunately, part of it is a down note, which we'll discuss later. But first off, let's jump into, I guess, listener email.
Yeah.
Listener feedback.
Jim, obviously, he's getting ready to go to Miller, and he's got a lot to think about and prepare, because he's driving there, which is 3 days. That's incredible.
Nah, it's not 3 days.
It's not 3 days.
It's 15 hours.
Oh, right. Oh, it's a doddle.
Yeah.
You could do two laps of Britain in that length.
There you go.
But, well, I guess we can't really start talking about the listener feedback without referring to what nearly all the listener feedback's been about, which...
Well, there was one bit. Let's talk about Doug Moore's email.
Okay,
he wrote in, I would like to hear some talk on what went wrong with the helmets in GP at Le Mans. Two riders with vision problems, and Rossi stated that his fogged up a bit too. Were there others besides those three? That would be Vermeulen, I believe, Spies, and yeah. Rossi, right? It shouldn't happen at that level, but in this case, was the rain and cold just that bad? Did the riders with problems all use the same helmet guy? I'm really upset that Spies felt better and his race was ruined by an unlucky grid lineup, but even worse, a helmet problem. I was angry when I heard a few commentators read a few articles that acknowledged his helmet issue, but went on to blame him for his poor showing. So there's no info specifically, but the conditions were definitely of the worst kind of variety because it wasn't that cold.
No.
That's the worst, right? When you get this on-off rain, because it wasn't pouring the whole time. So there's a lot of moisture in the air because the temperature is such that the it's just not going to condensate enough to fall. So you get this muggy, nasty, hazy fog hanging around in the air, and you know, there's actually just no solution for that. I mean, they've got you know, all the different kinds of materials and sprays and stuff you can use. Obviously, those of you who ride in inclement weather have run into this problem. And, you know, there's lots of solutions, but none of them are perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when, if you think back to when I was at Alton Park, and one of the extra bits we threw in the end was James Whittam talking to the Shoei tech who deals with all the Shoei helmets. Now, he said they all have pinlock visor inserts. Now, I've got a helmet with a pinlock visor insert, and I've never had a problem with that one misting up
at all.
And no, around the edge, yes, but where the double visor bit is, if anyone's not aware, the pinlock is just like a second visor that clips inside the main visor, and it's almost like double glazing, and it just gives you it isolates that the main central part of your visor. And the rest of it can mist up around the edge, but I've never had it misting up. And, you know, I've ridden in some, well, I rode bikes in Britain, so obviously I've ridden in some pretty dodgy weather conditions. it's sort of unavoidable. And I do find it incredible that they're having this problem.
I mean, obviously, Rossi wears AGV, and I believe that Spies is a showy guy. But he's not AGV. So,
no.
Different helmets, you know, different visors. Everybody got affected the same way. So I think it was just some strange, you know, equilibrium between the temperature of the air, the amount of moisture in the air that hit that sweet spot where everybody was getting fogged up.
Moody and Ryder referred to it, and they said, one of them said something about these conditions, terrible for visors, and I think it was Toby Moody said, yep, it's visors taped down. You don't want to open the slightest crack. So basically to stop air coming in, obviously that's not possible to do it completely, but then wasn't it Rossi who had to crack his helmet open a little bit?
Yeah, he was saying that there were a couple of laps there where he was fighting both against the Tectoire guys and his visor because he had to, you know, adjust it.
Yeah, so, interesting. We'll come on to in more detail to what happened to everybody when we do the race itself. Doug Edmiston wrote in, frequent emailer and friend of the show. He said he's willing to put money on the Ducati being 913cc. He said they probably won't ever admit to it, but with the 81mm bore limit and the engine supposedly revving to 17,000 RPM, it all points to a 913cc engine. I read that bit and thought, does it? Okay, I'll go with that. Because he's got 81mm bore times a 1.744-inch stroke equals 913cc at the theoretical rev limit of 17.2. I'll take your word for it, Doug. That's way more in-depth technical stuff than I'm competent to talk about.
But the interesting thing here is there's so many things that are pointing that Doug may very well be right, because if you look at the problem with the Ducati is the power delivery comes on so strong, which is usually very indicative of a very high rev limit.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to bet that they're going to slow that sucker down and bore it out. I mean, slow down the revolutions and bore that sucker out.
Yeah, but they've got a limit of an 81mm bore, haven't they? They can't go bigger.
Well, that's just, it's not a bore, it's a stroke. Right.
Oh, right. So they can extend the stroke.
I'm just saying that they're gonna make it to 990 is my guess, and they're going to slow it down.
Right. Got you. Yes.
Get a little bit more usable power, because I have a feeling that they have about 20 horses on the Yamaha and even maybe the Honda, which is useless if they can't do anything with it. Right.
No. Of course. Of course.
So.
Yeah, but interesting, and it does just show the level of technical knowledge of some of our listeners, which is fantastic, because they can fill in for my shortcomings.
And mine, man. I mean, I don't know squat about this. I just thought that if they slow down the motor and bore it out, they could keep the same torque and make it a little more usable. That's been a theory anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I guess now we have to talk about the Casey Stoner part.
Yes, it was a bit of a bombshell, wasn't it?
Yes.
There's just been a press conference with Valentino Rossi where he'd scotched rumours that he might be moving to World Rally Championship or World Superbikes next year. He said, nope, at least two more years in MotoGP, thank you, and I'd like it to be with Ducati because we have to try and make this work. And everyone, I think, was quite happy and relieved to hear that. Yep. So everyone's talking about that. Then there's a press conference that Casey Stoner said, I'm retiring at the end of the year. Everyone was like,
boom.
Do what now?
right.
Lots and lots and lots of reaction.
Well, all over the net, obviously, every single forum website that allows comments, obviously our Facebook page, Twitter was massively overrun. And, you know, I mean, so much has been said that I don't know how to summarize it. I mean, Casey has reasons for quitting that are beyond just not wanting to race anymore. He outlined a whole bunch of grievances he had over the years with the way he's been treated. And some of it, you know, is totally, I mean, all of it is legit. Some of it seems a little bit kind of funny because, you know, for somebody who's so honest and you know, has this don't give a shit attitude, you'd think he wouldn't give a shit about those kinds of things. And they did obviously affect him deeply. And you know, there's an interesting piece that David Emmett wrote on Motor Matters about all that, and actually he's been writing about Stoner's issues with the media for a long time, saying that it all started because, as David puts it, Casey, you know, committed the cardinal sin of beating Valentino Rossi.
Yeah.
Which there's a lot of truth to that, but I have to point out that I was, you know, I remember Casey in the 2005 250 championship when he was fighting Espedrosa, and I mean, he was constantly complaining about you know, being treated differently and the same kind of stuff that we're hearing now, except, you know, a little bit less visible. You know, he was a championship contender, and it was at Phillip Island where he could have taken the lead, but ended up crashing, and then Pedrosa ran away for the rest of the season, last three races. But I remember that. I remember not really knowing that much about him, and already being kind of like, yeah, this guy, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Which he carries. He's carried for, you know, since then, for the last, you know,
but
7 years.
That he's never managed to, with a lot of people, he's not managed to shake off that reputation for being, you know, Stoner the Moaner. Whereas you think back to Lorenzo in 250s, he was horrible to everyone.
He was a dick.
He was a real petulant, childish, you know, angry little kid. Because I remember us talking about him coming up,
the biggest surprise with Lorenzo was how incredibly gracious and
the humility, and yeah,
the humility that he gained as he.
And I was very, very ready not to like him. So my my fandom of Lorenzo really dates from, really nailed on with dates from China 2008 and that incredible race when he rode injured and all that. But before that, you know, three pole positions, a win at Estoril, it's like, wow, this kid's good. And I was waiting for the golden helmet, in your face, everyone else attitude, and it just didn't come. So, but I don't think people have.
They did give him a lot of shit for, you know, quote unquote, trying to be Rossi with the celebrations or whatever. You know, obviously, there's people out there who are going to be listening to it, going, rolling their eyes, going, here they go. They're slamming Casey Stoner again. I'm actually incredibly upset that he's leaving the championship because, as we talked about last week, he's in an era where we actually have some of the most incredible competition in MotoGP. And now that the racing is actually starting to get close, it's getting even more amazing. This really could be the greatest season we've seen in a really freaking long time.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think to finish the thought of that Casey's never managed to shake it, it's a shame with a lot of people. It's a shame because he has changed and matured so much. You think about the angry Casey in the Laguna Seca paddock after the 2008 race with all that. That's racing, is it? Right. Well, we'll see. You know, and all that real stroppiness. And he's still got that thing of if he thinks something's wrong with the bike, he'll say it. But the post-race interview.
Or another race, you mean? Or another race where, like, a racer that gets in his line gets punched? I mean, that's not that long ago.
I don't think that's petulant. That's just angry. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. He is an angry guy.
Yeah. And I don't think he's ever forgiven a lot of the press for speculating that whether the lactose intolerance was genuine. That's been quoted. He's become a dad. I think possibly Marco Simoncelli had an effect. And then so closely followed by him becoming a father for the first time. He's got a, you know, and I remember quotes with him before where someone said, is that the most amazing feeling when he won at Phillip Island. And he went, it was good. And they're like, oh, okay, what was better? And he said, well, I've got to be honest, I'm happiest working on Mum and Dad's farm and going home to Adriana at the night. And he thought, wow, okay, that's not what I expected to hear. So he does, he operates to a different set of motivations to most of the others do. We've talked about this before. We don't think he likes the whole show. We know that. I'm not convinced he's that addicted to racing bikes or even to the sensation of winning. He likes it, but I think he's just got this incredible ability to view the bigger picture and realize, well, it's great, but it's not real life, or it's not what life, it's not everything that life is about. I thought the interview with Lorenzo summed up when he said, for the championship, it's terrible news. It's really bad. He's going to be sorely missed. For the rest of us, it's pretty good. there was this cheeky little smile. I thought, bloody hell, he's thinking, well, that's one out the way.
right. No, exactly. You know, and for anybody thinking that Casey Stoner is going to change his mind, no way.
No, I don't think. If he was desperate, he'd rather, race a few mates around his field to get the feeling of winning again on a motocross bike than actually come back publicly and say, I was wrong. Mick Doohan said as much. He said he may change his mind, but that won't change the outcome. He said, he might miss it and he might change his mind and want to come back. But I don't think he will, because that would mean you lot were right and he was wrong. And he's not going to accept that.
That and I think he convinces himself. I mean, he's very forward looking in that sense. I think that he never really understood the sport he was in.
No.
You know? I don't think he really understood his role, and he was frustrated with this strange response from the fans that he got, and he made it worse because he fought against it instead of just kind of saying, I mean, really, I kind of wish that he had been that Teflon man that he could have been. Like, I think Doohan really was made of Teflon. He did not, he truly didn't give a crap, and he didn't give a crap what people said about him, you know? Whereas I think Casey inside really suffered a bit, and that sucks. That sucks for he doesn't suck for that. It sucks for him, I think, that he didn't get to enjoy the pinnacle of the sport. Isn't that a shame, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That the buzz that he must get from being the fastest rider in the world, which I think even as a Lorenzo fan, you have to say at the moment, Casey is, it's blooming close, but he is incredibly quick. And I think he could have gone on to challenge some, records, but he's not interested in them, is he? He's not.
No.
He doesn't care about, oh, you've now, you're only three behind Wayne Rainey or Wayne Gardner, wasn't it? He on the wins, and you've now overtaken. So he's like, really? Oh, okay, fine. But I remember, I mean,
that's cool. And that's great that he has that kind of attitude. It's just that it doesn't fit in with the rest, which is this, some kind of pain that he's in, mental pain, anguish from all the.
And I just shudder with shame when I think about him being booed at Donington. The only reason people, I can ever think that people did it, was because, as David Emmett has pointed out so many times, he had the audacity to beat everyone's darling Valentino Rossi. It's just so mindless. And blind, and you think, hang on, for the Valentino Rossi fans, thank goodness at last we started to get some riders who could challenge Valentino, because the best you see of Valentino is when he's got someone who can run with him that he doesn't have to slow down and wait for just to give the fans a show. I mean, Biagi didn't get booed the way Casey did.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, he
well,
did.
He did. But yeah,
he totally did, dude. Come on. Come on. That's the thing. I just don't buy that argument at all. I mean, there's so much more to Casey Stoner's, the fact that that's why he got booed. That's not the only reason why. I mean, yeah, this kid, this snot-nosed kid comes up and, Lorenzo went through the same thing. People were, but look how quickly they accepted him. Casey Stoner came with personal baggage that people saw. you know, I judge a lot of the fan reaction, because believe it or not, I actually play devil's advocate very often, and I think that sometimes it gets taken the wrong way, and as if I'm actually speaking for myself. But I'm just, you know, I like to explore the different opinions. I do have my own opinions, obviously, but the person who I turn to when I want to see a pure fan, not a racing fan, like, because there's these purists,
yeah,
who, if the sport was for purists only, you know, that they wouldn't be able to sponsor a can of Coke, you know.
Yeah,
there's a need for the casual fan, and the casual fan in my family is my wife, and my wife, you know, is obviously a Rossi fan, but she immediately was, when she saw Lorenzo, she immediately clicked with him. She was like, "This is a winner. This guy's a winner. You know, he's beating Rossi, and that pisses me off, but I like him. He's a winner." And she never took to Casey Stoner. It wasn't that she hated him, but she was just like, I just don't get it. I don't get why he's got a negativity about him, you know? So, and she does not read all the journalist stuff. She wakes up on Sunday mornings with me when there's a race and watches a race with me. That's pretty much the extent. She doesn't go read all these forums and have discussions on Crash.net, all any of that shit. So I think she's the purest kind of casual fan, and yet there was some kind of reaction. So I don't buy that it's just as he beat Rossi kind of business, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my sounding board is Sharon, and she's a huge Rossi fan, and she was whooping on Sunday, you know, watching him being better. At the same time, saying, you know, she just says, "I do understand it's because of the conditions." So that edge is taken off. But she has an issue. She actually likes Casey a lot more than Lorenzo. And she said, her problem with Lorenzo is, she said, he's boring. And I said, well, I don't, my fandom isn't based on his personality. She said, no, it's not. It's just his personality. His riding's so perfect.
It is. Isn't that true?
Boring. And she said, I get it though. If you're a rider and you've done track days or you've been out on the road, she said, to you, you can appreciate the technical expertise he's displaying and watch that perfection lap after lap. She said, I can't. She said, I can watch Casey lap after that, because it's like, well, he's going to get thrown out of the saddle at this corner, surely. Because the way it bucks and weaves, and he just goes with it, and it doesn't slow him down. And she said, so she came up with something on Sunday. She said, whenever I see Rossi riding and riding well, she said, I know that there's a big smile underneath the helmet. And he sort of, I got what she meant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, she said, but it's horses for courses. If everyone liked the same person, it would be really boring. And I thought, well, we used to have it like that.
There were a lot of Nicky Hayden fans and a lot of.
Yeah.
Max Biaggi fans, and
but we have got to just Gibbernau
had, I think, a carload full of fans at one point.
The young female Spanish ones.
Yeah.
We've just got to give a shout out as well. Paul Hayward posted on the MotoPod Facebook page, and I don't know where it originated from. I saw it on Twitter. He said, the troubled Casey is his talent outweighed his ambition, which has been doing the rounds. I'm sure everyone's heard it, but it was just a brilliant take on
it.
And of course, it was Le Mans last year. No, it was Jerez last year, wasn't it? When Rossi wiped him out in the wet, and he said, "You know, your ambition outweighed your talent." But that was a great little gem. And we had lots of different takes.
Many, many different emails. I mean, you know, we obviously can't answer all of them, but I did want to mention special mentions to Paul Murray, Daryl McGrath, Garrett Lockett, Doug Moore. And I'm sorry for the rest of you whose names are not on our list here. We did read all your emails, and we've kind of just, I think, answered all of them in this little, you know, dialogue we just had.
And it is worth mentioning, I think, Lee Nanton, who wrote in and said, why is it that just as Stoner becomes personable, he decides to retire? Which I thought, they may not be unconnected, those two things, that he... Maybe it's just as he's gradually come to this decision over the last few months or possibly years, he's thought, at least I know I don't have to have this fight with teams, with the press, with the fans forever. This is not the future.
You've been in the same job, Martin, for a while, right? Like the yep. same, pretty much it's the same group of people you're working with.
Yep.
So for me, I work in tech, and I work in startups, and I've worked some jobs that are only that last only like a year and a half, and then they either fail or they get bought out or something, and they move on to something else, or I get bored. And there is this incredible feeling when you decide to switch, to move to a different, to switch your the pace of your life and go to a new job, whatever, a new phase.
Yeah.
And you get awesome and you're some people just lame out and are lazy. But for me, that's when my best work happens. You know, I really yep. start enjoying my job. It's like, because I know it's where it's going to end. It's not this Bataan death march that never seems to end, you know? It's like, oh, I know, I see the end of the tunnel. And like for Casey, and again, I have to emphasize this, I feel it's a horrible shame that such an incredible athlete didn't actually enjoy the sport enough to want to stay.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing if he had come up and said, I have a daughter, I love my wife, I'm on the top of the game. This is a good time to exit. I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to, risk my daughter not having a father, or having a father who's, you know, in a wheelchair or something. I'm done. That would have been completely different than this kind of, you know, I really never enjoyed it. You know, like I enjoyed the individual races, but the sport never gave him the kind of enjoyment that it does all these other racers. And that's
to be fair, he said it's no longer the sport which he fell in love with, and bikes have been part of his life since he was four, and he doesn't want to lose that. So now's the time to go. But I do think it's worth speculating. I think Lorenzo is going to feel under massive pressure not to let Casey go out as the champion again.
Oh, I know.
Because whoever wins next year, it's devalued, because it will be, well, if Casey had still been here.
Exactly. Absolutely. And I'm just really looking forward to what's going to happen, because it's setting up to be fantastic. You know, they got two yep. each, right?
Absolutely.
So
I think we'll probably mention that again later on as we go through. But
well, so you know, Paul Pacey, I think, was the first person to write in. I mean, obviously, everyone right away started talking about, silly season.
Yeah.
It's already started now because this really, really, it gets interesting now, because...
Well, as Jim said, the last one's only just finished and we're kind of into the new one already.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's pretty insane. And you know what? We'll save the speculation for another show, I think, because there's plenty of time to talk about this.
Yeah.
But there has been, obviously, talk of pretty much, if you can name a writer, they've been connected with that scene.
Someone's tipped it, yeah. And of course, the linchpin now is Lorenzo. We were just as people were saying a couple of years ago, it was Rossi potentially moving, and then no one else can do anything till we know where he's going or staying at Yamaha or whatever. And then it was Casey, and this time, until Lorenzo makes his mind up, everything else is up in the air. Then once he either confirms he's staying at Yamaha or moving to Honda or doing whatever, then everything else will fall into place.
Right.
And exactly. he's just probably had a large increase to his wages, because Yamaha are going to have to make sure if they want to keep him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In other bits, I hadn't seen this. The spy shots.
The Suzuki.
Yeah. I'll have to have a look at that.
Mm-hmm. There's some information about Suzuki putting together a MotoGP prototype, and the, you know, obviously there's speculation that's even what we're looking at, but we'll have a link in the show notes, something for 2014 to think about. You know, Suzuki did say they were going to come back, so there's no surprise that they're testing something. But it's good to see, you know, that somebody actually captured some interesting images in cycle world.
Yeah. World Superbike, or In Front Motorsports, who own World Superbike rights, apologised for the Monza weather debacle and have said to fans who attended the races, if you keep your ticket when you come back next year, you can have free paddock access on Sunday. And Jules says he's still not going to attend.
Well, you know what? After Steve Brooks's piece last week,
That was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. I think I'd like to go see a Formula One race there, because that track is made for Formula One.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really good for Formula One. The exact things that I hate about it for motorcycle racing are actually make it really, really cool for Formula One. A massive straight going into the chicane. That's fun stuff in a car, not in the bike. So, I don't know, but I'm probably not going to be going to Monza.
No.
And then, of course, we're going to, Jim and I are going to Miller, as you mentioned earlier. Jim is driving out there with the world's greatest motorcycle fan, Chuck Forker, and some other friends. And I'll be flying out there, and we'll be meeting up. And we still don't have a location, but we've had a couple of people write in that they're going to be there. So we are making plans. It'll most likely be on Sunday. The race is on Monday, so we'll most likely be on Sunday in the evening-ish, like 5 p.m. And because Miller has got this around the media center, it's all open to the public. I think we'll just pick a spot somewhere in there. But anyway, we'll keep in touch by that email address, meetup@motopodcast.com. And we'll email everybody who's emailed us there and let you know. And also post to Facebook and Twitter, blah, 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 blah.
Which is something to look forward to. And, of course, the races are on Monday, aren't they?
Yes. Yep.
But they're in the evening for us here in the Europe, which makes life easier for watching them. We had three very different and very interesting races at the weekend. Moto3, we'll start with. We were back to the traditional sequence of races, Moto3, Moto2, and then MotoGP. Over the weekend, we had a mixture of conditions. Some sessions were damp, some were dry, some were... they weren't full wet conditions, were they, on Friday or Saturday, I don't think. And on Sunday morning, it was absolutely lashing down. And yeah. The Moto3 boys went out. The grid was Vinales, Vasquez, Oliveira. Then the next second row, Cornfile, Masbu, Sandra Cortese, and remember that name. And third row was Moncoya, Faubel, and Salom. And they headed off.
But Efren Vasquez never even got to start.
No. We had more DNFs than we had finishers.
But he never even started the race. He never even got back to the grid.
No, we had, there were three of them. Brad Binder, Luigi Morciano. They started but didn't complete the first lap. And Vasquez he didn't finish the warm-up lap.
Right.
There were gaps.
Technical issue.
In fact, I think there were two. I think it was him and Morciano. There were two. And people were, Toby Moody and Julian Ryder speculating, surely it can't be wiring looms in the wet. You know, that you'd think that they were pretty well protected these days. That was pretty grim. And then
if it was, dudes, Vaseline, man, it works really well.
And then off we went, and it was carnage. It was absolute
carnage. We had less than half bikes finished, right?
Yep. We had more DNFs than we did. In fact, we had 15 finishers, so everyone who finished got at least 1 point. And in that case, Nicky Io got the 1 point. He was four laps down. And he crashed at least once, I think possibly twice, but he still kept going. But I mean, the lap chart, we started off and initially out front was Zulfami Khairuddin, the Malaysian rider. And he was looking really good. And again, Moody Rider speculating, how does a Malaysian rider get so good in the wet? Well, if you go riding at Sepang at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you have to be good at riding in the wet. Didn't last long. He went down. Then we had Hector Faubel picked up the pace. Vinales got a bit monstered in the first few laps. He ended up back in fifth or sixth, I think. And there was a group. It was typical Moto3, big gang at the front. beating each other up, and they were sort of slightly breaking away from the group behind. But like every lap, people were going down. Romano Fenati went down quite early. Danny Kent, Danny Webb, the two Brits, went out. Jack
and
Miller.
The Fenati thing, wasn't there a kind of an incident because he was upset with someone?
I think it was
Fenati went down.
Yeah, I mean, he had a proper fit in the gravel. Yes.
Yeah.
A fit in the pit. Wasn't happy at all. There was some kicks delivered to gravel. And then gradually it sort of settled down. Faubel held the lead for quite a while, but then went down. Mm-hmm. And he was out. Then we had Miguel Oliveira, who looked fantastic. He pulled out a bit of a lead. He just looked really settled and smooth. And Oliveira's crash was strange. It was pre-turning in. It would just look like he just locked the front.
It looked a lot like the crash that Elias did a couple of times last year.
Yeah,
Where he was going straight and then just fell, you know?
And the front just tucked and he got slammed down. And it was like, blimmin' heck. We'd already lost Luis Salom. And Vinales took the lead with Oliveira going down and looked steady and assured for at least a lap. And then he went down. It was just...
And some distance behind him, actually not some distance, he was quite close. Behind him was Louis Rossi, who was pushing him along. Not related to Valentino Rossi and not even in the same, from the same country, because the French Louis... No. Rossi, I guess. Rossi.
But he was, you could hear on the Eurosport feed, you could hear the crowd going absolutely nuts as he went past the grandstands. And he managed to hold it together for the last, seven, eight laps.
Yeah, it's important to note that both him and Vinales really already had built up a big lead.
Yeah.
So when Vinales felt, obviously he was all alone.
Yeah.
With who was behind him?
Sandro Cortese was suddenly the championship leader, was looking like he's looking for 20 points. He was safely in second place and he fell, but he managed to remount and came in sixth. So not at all a disaster. And he stretched his lead. But it was fantastic. Louis Rossi in France, and my word, they have a good national anthem. There was a lot of Twitter talk. Ian Wheeler was pitching in with, you know, so nice to hear a national anthem that isn't a dirge, because ours is a dirge. It's poor. But anyway, there you go. So the championship now, Sandro Cortese is 12 points clear of Maverick Vinales, who must be thinking, oh God, he's this year's Nico Tirol. we've got Luis Salom in third with 49 points behind. Cortese 67, Vinales 55. Salom, you know, in touching distance, 6 points behind that.
Absolutely.
Romano Fenati on 45, Alex Rins on 44, Moncoya 33, Louis Rossi now on 32. So he had 7 points coming into this weekend. He's now got 32, Antonelli 31, Kai Redding 29, so on and so forth. Oh, Arthur Siss is in 10th place with 23. And then onwards.
Miguel Oliveira, who's been featured in the front of the pack so many times this year, in 16th, with just 11.
Yeah.
So just painful. And you know, we have a good friend of the show on that is running the team there, Lele Martinelli. So I hope things turn around for them because, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to Moto 2, where on the grid we had Marquez, Luthier, Paul Espargaró, who's been probably the surprise package of the season. He's always been quick or potentially quick, but then he could disappear in races, as we've seen so often with Moto 2. And he's shown some real consistency. Scott Redding, Andrea Iannone, and Mika Kallio made up row two, with Alex De Angelis, Johann Zarco, and Claudio Corti behind. And a lot of people saying Zarco is going to be really up for this because, you know, with Rossi winning the Moto 3 race, you know, the idea of having a Frenchman up front would be quite attractive to him. And off we went. And it, again, was not as crash-strewn as the Moto3 race, but we did have a lot of people going down.
Amazing to me was that we made it through the chicane at the start with only one rider falling in Moto2, because that, I mean, that's the biggest cringe moment at Le Mans every year with Moto2, going into, you know, because turn one is so unbelievably fast. You're fully open, leaned over, then you have to start braking, and it's the giant, you know, mass of swarming bees goes into this chicane, and it was amazing that they made it through with just actually it was two. I think Krumenacker and somebody else went through, but the other rider was able to rejoin.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't have a massive amount of leader changes, but the leading pack had an awful lot going on in it. I think the key lesson here was when you get out front, you don't really want to be necessarily trying to push too far ahead. We've seen it so many times. You know, the guy gets out front, you're thinking, how can you put that much sort of gap in? And then it's the anticipation he's going to go down. And Paul Espargaro led the first seven laps. Then he got taken by Tom Luthy, who'd started in fourth and slowly made his way forwards. Then Espargaro went down ran off and rejoined in ninth position on lap nine and had to sort of do it all again. And slowly made his way forward and scored some good, decent points. But it finished Luthy, Courtney, Redding. The story of the race, though, was just a lot of drama. Zarco,
it was really pushing Luthy,
Zarco was on it, and he was looking really strong. Gino Rea was right up front at one point, and a lot of the British fans were tweeting and saying great to see him up there, and they've just changed chassis, riding in the wet. He was looking really good, and Zarco came past him, and then there was an absolute Twitter storm, as I believe the phrase is that people use now, saying, you know, Zarco should be banned because he just wiped Gino Rea out. Zarco went past and I think was just trying to hold the line.
He swept across the entire track. He knew that there was going to be a rider there, and he was basically... We've seen Zarco do this exact thing before. I mean, in last year, 125s, he's not a fair player. So I definitely saw that move. Iffy at best.
Well, he was doing the Ayrton Senna thing, wasn't it? He will put himself in a position that you either back off or crash. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Gino Rea did not back off, so he crashed, because front wheel against rear wheel, the rear wheel nearly always wins. Gino Rea went down and had an absolute paddy fit in the gravel. I mean, I think, again, it was Ian Wheeler saying, yeah, I understand you're disappointed. It was a great ride, but there's no excuse for dad dancing like that. But I think he's come away very happy that he was running as fast as he could, or as fast as he was, but obviously very disappointed. And Zarco was closing and closing on Luthy, and he was looking really good. And then he went down, and there were lots of people going, ah, there you go.
Yeah, and you know, and his crash was so strange because he rode the bike like a sled.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
Like climbed on top of it.
Yeah.
You know? The scariest crash of the entire weekend by far was when De Angelis went down, when there was still a big group of riders together, because he went down at the very top of that of the chicane,
yes,
and slid down the hill and then back onto the track. And how?
But the presence of mind, he was sliding on his back, looking back at the traffic and almost directing them. Right, you go that way, you go that way.
Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah,
is
exactly.
What I'm
going to. He was waiting.
It was so cool. I thought, wow. Your life is in danger here, and he was just such a cool head, which is not something we often associate with Alex De Angelis.
Because we don't know that, because he may have been screaming, in his in his helmet like a little girl. So we don't know.
Yeah. I was going to say, wouldn't have been Cortese. Was it Corsi, Simone Corsi, you mean? Anyway, because one of them went down.
And oh, Cortese was the one who went down and
Cortese kept... in Moto 3.
Oh, so yeah, Cortese in Moto 3 crashed with the... Yeah, when he crashed, he held on to his throttle hand and clutch the entire time. The bike was spinning, and that's what I meant. Like it was so slippery out there, so every fall takes a lot longer, you know. Yeah. And the bike takes a lot longer to stop, and he just kept. I mean, his arm was in this really strange position, but he managed to keep it together and get it back up there.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Again, we had a similar situation with Marquez de Vinales. Started quite tentatively, down in 10th position at one point, got mulled by a lot of people, slowly worked his way back up, got up to third, and then crashed. So Marquez was out. He managed another lap limping round and then had to retire. And Scott Redding basically was in the top four for pretty much the entire race.
And the thing is that this proves, I think, to us that he just needs to work on his tire management, because he didn't kill his tires, and look where he ended up.
Yeah, he got a podium.
This is the real proof.
So we finished with Luthi Corti-Redding, Iannone Callio, Pol Espargaró in sixth, and Pol Espargaró, I can't remember if he ran off and rejoined or if he actually crashed, picked it up and rejoined. Then we had Rain Specialist, Ant West in seventh, Max Neukirchner, Ratterpark, Willerott, Bradley Smith in 10th, who had also been running really well, and he crashed down.
He crashed in the last corner right before the finish line.
He went down, and someone else went down there, and we thought that was...
That they came together there, that's right.
Was it Takahashi? Yeah, and we thought the bin had coming together. Actually, it hadn't. It was completely independent. Was it Julian Simon? Possibly. And Bradley ran his bike across the finish line, similar to as we saw Leon Haslam at Donington Park in World Superbikes last week. And he managed to score 6 points.
Yeah.
In 10th place. So then we had Esteve Rabat, Tony Elias, Julian Simon, Nico Tirole, and Dominic Agata were the other point scorers, which leaves the championship. Pol Espargaró is in the lead on 71. Right. 1 point behind is Marquez on 70. 2 points behind him is Luthi on 68. Then a massive gap back to Iannone on 46. So it's like 22-point gap between those top three. Scott Redding, 44, Mika Kallio, 33, so on and so forth downwards. So this is really shaping up. And Pol Espargaró, hats off to the lad. You know, he's everyone was expecting it would be the Marquez-Luthi championship fight, and he's thrown himself in the mix. And if he can stay there, that's going to make it interesting. So MotoGP, we had a Dani Pedrosa was on pole with Casey Stoner and Andrea Dovizioso. It was another really exciting qualifying period, and it was changing towards the end. And everyone was saying, come on, you can get across the line, because Lorenzo threw away his penultimate lap, but had time to get across for another flying lap and threw it away. Lots of people just sat up. Dovi had come in. He was in third position at that point, where he did stay. And they came into the pits with time to go out, get an out lap and then a flying lap, and just shook his head and went, no, no, no. And then it turned out it had just started to spit with rain. So basically, QP effectively finished about 4 minutes before the checkered flag came down. So we had Pedrosa, Stoner, Dovizioso, Lorenzo, Crutchlow and Spies in all Yamaha second row, much better from Ben. Rossi was seventh, Bautista and Barbera in eighth, ninth. Then we had Abraham, Hayden, Depunier. Stefan Bradl, poor qualifying, behind one of the CRTs. He was in 13th position with Pirro and Hernandez, James Ellison, Espargaró and Petrucci, and Silva, Pessini, and Chris Vermeulen, of course, standing in for Colin Edwards, made up the back of the grid.
Boy, was he off 5 seconds. Woo.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be tough. coming back to that. Although Chris, I guess, was doing the rain dance on Saturday night and it worked.
Yeah.
And we took off at the beginning of, as the lights went out, and the line that both Ben Spies and Randy DePugno were on, which was they were in line with rider number three, which of course was Dovi.
They were the rightmost.
Now, Dovi got off okay. Ben had a right fishtail and dropped him way, way back. I think at the end of the first lap, Ben was in 18th position.
And who was behind him was Barbera. And if you look at the start, Barbera also is fishtailing like crazy.
Yeah. And then behind them was Randy DePugno, who fishtailed to the point he actually crashed.
Right. It was weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
And he managed,
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, it span up and the back wheel came round on him and he went down. And he managed to come in and get his other bike. But as someone pointed out, it's a good job he didn't score any points because he would have been disqualified, because if you change bikes, and it was obviously declared a wet race, so the second bikes were there ready to go. You have to change tyre. You have to have different types of tyres. They don't have intermediates. No one would have survived the first corner on slicks. So he went out again on full wets. So I'm guessing it was a PR thing. Look, there's French fans here. He's the French rider.
Well, I think that the team was arguing that he didn't finish a lap. Therefore, he was allowed to go and change bikes and as long as he went through the pit lane.
That was speculated at the time. I thought the final analysis was if he had scored points, he would have been disqualified. But anyway, that's
right. Interesting. Interesting.
And it's irrelevant because he didn't finish the race. But we also had a obvious problem with Carol Abraham, who came into the pits and retired.
Yep.
Not quite sure.
And you know what the thing is that Spies, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the hell happened, but he came back into the pits with visor issues.
Yeah.
It was clear that because they were frantically trying to clean his visor. Did they change anything on the bike? It was so strange for him to pull in and then they're looking at his frickin' visor.
Yeah.
Was that the only thing that they had to fix on his entire person and bike?
Well, he came in on, he was 14th position on lap six. He came out again down in 18th position.
Yeah.
And then, of course, was lapped after that.
Right.
So, yeah. And he never really recovered and just missed out on scoring a point. So, yeah, again. And
damn it, Ben.
Yeah. This is a combination of something and certainly luck not going his way.
Yeah.
But at the front, we had a very brief punch-up at the first couple of corners. And, of course, you get that right and the left. So if someone takes the inside lane on corner one, they have to make sure they're a full bike length ahead so they can get across the inside line on turn two, which a lot of people were failing to do and a lot of people behind were using to their advantage. Lorenzo got out front and stayed there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, if you were going to look at the race winning pass and the lap chart, you'd be like, "Whoa, this race sucked," you know, because Lorenzo's race winning pass was within the first two corners, and then that was it.
Yeah, and he just pulled out a small gap at first, and then it slowly stretched and stretched and stretched.
Yeah,
behind him we had. We had Danny Petrosa going backwards. Danny ended up down in sixth at one point. And a small but dedicated group of chasers led by Casey Stoner going after Lorenzo. And there's some great battles developed. We had Dovi and Cal just running, doing the Tech Tour point train again.
How fun are those guys to watch?
Yeah, fifth and sixth, then fourth and fifth. That was Dovi leading Cal. End of during lap 10, Cal got in front, then Dovi got back in front, and it was fantastic. And then coming up like a slowly cruising shark came Valentino Rossi. You could see, and I got what Shan said, you know, that underneath that helmet, you know he's grinning, because you could see there was quite a lot of enjoyment going on. And he slowly closed them down. Then Cal crashed. Managed to remount.
Well, hang on. He passed them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they repassed him, and he passed them again, and he repassed them, and he was having this great ding-dong with those guys. And
yeah,
then
we've
Cal
got lap 13. It's Dovi, Cal, Valentino. Stayed the same for lap 14.
Because if you look at the lap chart, you know, you see Rossi in third position for many, many laps, but that's not the way it was because...
Of course, that's only recording the end of the lap. Yeah,
yeah,
during
yeah.
that lap.
Five of those laps towards the second... There's the middle there. I mean, it was Dovi and Cal were ahead of him.
And the other person who was making startling progress was Stefan Bradl. And again,
yeah.
I mean, he was seventh by the end of the last lap, coming up from 13th. So he had a great first lap. And then he just stayed in seventh. On lap 19, moved into sixth. And on lap 25, moved into fifth, which is where he finished. But again,
he does not tell
the story.
Yeah, exactly, because he was fighting with Pedrosa.
Yeah, yeah, and he stalked him for a long, long time, and he just wasn't able to get past and make it stick. Although he did, you know, he had a pop a few times. We had Cal go down remount, we had Dovi go down remount, and they finished seventh and eighth, which looks, you know, I mean, for a satellite team, you think they're decent results. Those guys are kicking themselves. They were so annoyed, both of them.
Yeah. Although I have to say that the biggest smile, well, second biggest smile of the weekend was from Dovi after the race. He really enjoyed that race, he said.
Yeah. Yeah. And he made some good points. He was interviewed beforehand and he said, you know, everyone prefers dry, but I hate the wet less than some of the other people. It's like... Yeah, I kind of get that. Yeah, I wouldn't choose to have a wet race if we're going to have one. I know there's other people who hate it more than me.
Right.
Nicky made good steady progress. He had a pretty lonely race, I think.
Very. I mean, his passes were due to guys crashing in front of him.
Yeah. But we finished. I mean, now we hardly saw Jorge Lorenzo for the whole race, because he was just out front, and I was, every time he did do a bit, he generally had the onboard camera coming into a corner. I'm thinking he shouldn't be going this fast. And the BBC commentary, when I watched it back later on Eurosport, they were saying, oh, how many times we've seen it in the last few weeks in different series, someone's out front in the wet, pulling away. You shouldn't be able to go away that fast. And Casey started to bring him, to reel him in. Jorge would notice and just push it a bit. And he said in the post-race interview, he said that it was really difficult. And I could see Casey coming. I'd think, I've got to try and get a little bit more, but without just going over the edge. I mean, it was a masterful
masterclass, as everyone was saying, masterclass.
Yeah, he controlled it from the front. And it would have been pretty dull if what was going on behind hadn't been going on behind.
And you know what was interesting officially it wasn't until last year that Lorenzo won a rain race.
No, wasn't it a year before at Le Mans?
But that's what I was going to say. Everybody was saying last year was the first time that Lorenzo won a full a rain race. But what they really meant was a full wet rain race, because I think one of the most amazing wet races that Lorenzo won was when he won in slicks at Le Mans.
Oh, yes. When
Rossi crashed like five times you know, I mean, that was to me one of the greatest wet weather victories, you know. And so it's kind of strange that doesn't count as a wet race because it didn't start as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, flag to flag.
And that was the one that he afterwards sort of had a big grin saying, wow, I can win in the wet. That's never happened before, which I was shocked at, you know, but this is just being a very wet season so far. And then behind we had Rossi and Stoner, and it was just like old times, but it was interesting. Both of them since, I mean, sportsmanship is breaking out all over the place. They were congratulating each other. Lorenzo included in Parc Fermé. There were handshakes and smiles. And in interviews afterwards, Rossi said, yeah, I was very conscious of Jerez last year, where I rode like a young rider. And unfortunately, in making my mistake, took out Casey. So, yeah, that was in my mind. Casey said he heard him arrive. He'd seen his pit board. He heard him arrive behind him. Thought, he'll be coming by here. No, he'll be coming by. And he said, and then he knew that Rossi was thinking about Jerez. And I think a bit of respect broke out through the clouds.
Accidentally?
Yeah. And then when Rossi did make his pass, Casey got him back. They made his pass again and made it stick. And Casey just couldn't go with him. And he said,
yeah,
he
would, both him and Pedrosa said that the tires just would not keep the heat.
Yeah.
The way their bikes are configured.
And then as it started to dry a little bit, not dry, but it became damp rather than soaking wet, the tires just immediately overheated and went off. And he said he was spinning up through all the gears. But I mean, Ross's bike, you watch Ross's bike, it was bucking and weaving. I'm thinking, hang on, this is in the wet. Why haven't you crashed yet? It was an incredible ride. Sad to say, again, that the blinkered, tunnel-visioned Rossianeri, or whatever they call themselves, the Rossi fans, gave Julian Ryder on Twitter, was getting absolute pelters from people I don't follow, but he was retweeting them, I suspect, with a mischievous smile. Because
I missed this.
Julian Ryder said, you know, it's fantastic to see him back on the box. This is what the sport needs. And, you know, I just need to remember that this was because the wet conditions smoothed out the problems the Ducati's having. It reduced them to the point that Rossi could do what Rossi can do, and he became the difference. So don't expect to see it next race. And then immediately everyone went ape. All the people, I think, wanted to see this as the rebirth. And it's like, guys, you've got to look at the facts and the conditions. Rossi himself said, you know, yep, I was very happy to see a wet race because I can do that in the wet, and it takes away that microscopic last bit that they can't get dialed in to ride at the limit and keep up with the others. Well, in the wet, that last microscopic bit's, you know, that's taken out. The field's levels that somewhat, and we can see what he can do. But to think that was the fix, and now he's going to be running at the front in the dry. I mean, it was a brilliant. Did you see the quote? A journalist said to him, slightly sycophantic journalist, I suspect, said, well, Valentino Rossi's back at the front, and this sport needs Valentino Rossi back at the front. And Rossi smiled and said, Valentino Rossi needs Valentino Rossi back at the front, which is just was absolutely brilliant. Kind of, yeah, all right, mate, shut up. I'm happy to be at the front. Never mind you and your bloody sport, you know. So it was great to see. The smile on his face was a real vindication of his earlier statement of, no, I'm here for at least another 2 years. And you think, now he's still got it. He's still got the love. He still wants to be at the front. He still wants to fix it. And it also just, you could almost imagine it if Lorenzo was a really nasty person, which I don't think he is. You could imagine him turning to Rossi on a podium going, hello, mate. I haven't seen you for ages. Where have you been? You know, and I'll get more pelters. Oh, yeah, I'd had an abusive tweet the other week, didn't I? I feel like a celebrity now. I've had abusive tweets at last. Right. So keep those coming. Congrats. That's funny. I'll probably get another one from Donkey Head or whatever he called himself. But yeah, it was a fascinating race. And when we look at the championship, Lorenzo retakes the lead on 90. From Stoner on 82, Pedrosa 65, Crutchlow 45, Dovizioso 44, Rossi now on 42. Bradle, brilliant ride. That boy is putting himself in the frame, I think, for something. 35.
Yeah.
And when did we last have a fast German? Oh, the last German we had was Alex Hoffman, but when did we have a fast German? But interesting, there is one rider who hasn't scored a single point yet. Apart from the stand-ins, obviously, like Chris Vermeulen, and that's Carol Abraham, who's really not living up to last year's promise.
Yeah,
That's a real shame. What was great to see was James Ellison finished as the highest CRT. The wet weather kind of, again, did the wipeout of the chatter problems. It took those away, So that's all they need is to spray water onto the track in front of him. Maybe not. And no doubt Paul Bird will think, oh, that was my mind games about replacing him with Shane Byrne that did the trick. But he finished his MyCRT in 11th place and scored some you know, really good points. And that would be a massive boost for James. Then we have Bassini, Espargaro, Pirro, Hernandez with the final point scorer. Sorry, Barbera, I missed out, was ahead of him in 9th behind the Tech Trois duo. Bautista in 10th. So all in all, it was a really, really good weekend. It was
very enjoyable. Very enjoyable races, all three.
Yeah.
Very different. All three were very different in what made them enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
it's cool to see that MotoGP showed us some really fantastic battles, like the best battles of the weekend, because the Dovi Rossi Kyle Crutchlow show was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Edge of your seat, you know. Granted, there were two guys ahead of them, so we were fighting for third. It'd be much nicer if we could have that kind of battle for first. But
someone said it's like two dogs. It was like two dogs snapping at the wounded bear with Tech Trois and Rossi. But those two Tech Trois lads, they're having a fantastic season. But they must be looking at each other thinking, do you mind if I have a slightly more fantastic season than you? Because there's possibly going to be a factory seat going next year, and I'd like to be the one in it. So, yeah, right. I mean, absolute hats off to both of them. I think they're very different characters, but I think they're both really entertaining to watch riding and to listen to. You know, Dovi's a really thoughtful speaker, and I do wish he had a bit more exposure. But like he says, you know, if the reason I don't is because of the person I am, I'll accept it because I'm happy with the person I am. And you think, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of wish that Casey Stoner would think that way.
Yeah. So looking forward, we've got World Superbikes at Miller this weekend. Yep. BSB are at Snetterton, the Norfolk track, which is a fast one, long straights. That's where last year we had the crash. I'm trying to remember who it involved, where a bike launched itself skywards and made it about 30 feet in the air.
Right.
You just see it in the background. Thankfully, no one was too seriously hurt. I think it was a broken leg, but nothing life-threatening. So we got Snetterton, and then we're going to Catalonia in 2 weeks for the next MotoGP round, and that could be sweet.
That could Lorenzo's be very sweet.
Backyard.
Yep, yep. That's why he's in my MCN league for this set of rounds.
Yeah, you and me are going to remain fairly static because we're quite similar now, I've noticed. Crutchlow and Lorenzo.
I put Stoner in now. Stoner,
oh, that's right. You got Stoner, Renzo. Yes. And then, but no, that's right. We're both Checker and Sykes, I think, for Miller.
Yes.
I had to put Carlos in because he loves that place. Yep. And the place loves him.
Yeah. 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 He's an adopted American.
Yeah. And,
right. So, let's not forget we've got also the TT coming up very soon. And we are going to the Northwest 200 just happened. Unfortunately, it was a fatality that kind of hits close to home because the rider who got killed was going to be Mark Miller's teammate.
Yeah, Mark Buckley was the rider that died, and really tragic. But you know, we know it. This happens with road racing, and no doubt there'll be more calls for it to be banned and all the rest of it. And
Jim and I were talking a lot about that that morning when we heard the news, because you know, I have this total love hate with real road racing, because I can't remember the last time we had a TT without a fatality.
Yeah.
And yet I admire these guys so much for doing what they do. And
I also respect that their argument that they don't have to do it. They choose to do it. It's freedom of expression, not freedom of expression. You know, it's freedom.
Yeah. You know, I have some thoughts about that I do want to address in the future, because I've having been kind of closer to the scene for the last few years, I have noticed that that's not necessarily the case. It may be for the top guys, but there are some guys who really have to do this because it's their job.
Yeah.
And in that, you know, I was in the middle of a scene in Indy last year that was really out of control, where, you know, guys were wasted and asking for hands, you know, handouts for a spare set of tires, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are on a shoestring budget. They live week to week and they do have to go out there and race. So,
yeah, yeah.
But you know, I'm not going to go down this path. I think it's very important that we listen to what Mark Miller has to say about his bud, you know, passing away, and then he also had some interesting things to say about Casey Stoner as well. So I think we should play that and listen respectfully.
Absolutely. Let's roll it.
All right. Let's do it.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Mark Miller, who has only recently arrived on the Isle of Man for this year's TT, hanging out with Vero. And it's good to have you on, man. You're probably all completely jacked up time-wise.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the jet lag going this direction is always difficult.
Yeah, last year it took me 2 weeks to get used to it, and then another week and a half when I get back.
Right. And then Vero says, she has the balls to say to me today, to my face, within, you know, punching distance, reach, I should say, she says, you know, it gets worse with age.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'm like, fuck you.
Hey, Vero.
Hey,
hello, dear. Has he taken care of his hair yet?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No comments.
Okay. But today was a bit of a weird day, dude. I mean, that's an understatement. Northwest 200 was running today, and we found out, much to our shock and dismay, that your teammate for the TT, Mark Buckley, who you and Dave and several others have gotten to know quite well, passed on the course. And so that kind of changes your perspective on a lot of things, doesn't it?
I don't think it changes the perspective as much as it's such a bummer and so disappointing and so sad. And I'm really bummed for him more than anybody else. You know, everybody likes to say his wife and his wonderful father that I know well, who's the coolest cat on earth. But, you know, I just get bummed because of all the things that he's going to miss out on now. And, you know, he doesn't want to die. And it's sort of more personal like that, because I know him really well, and he's just a fucking awesome guy. And to hear that, I mean, it's just such a shock. For the first hour, it's kind of like, oh, wow, that's weird. And then, like, the second hour, it starts setting in. And the third hour, it's permanent.
Yeah. Yep. There's a term that people use that I can never quite agree with. You know, people say, well, at least they died doing what they loved.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, they would prefer not to have died. Really? Well,
for any other reason that it keeps you from doing the activity that you love so much.
Right. Exactly.
But exactly. I agree with you. I don't think that's a whole lot of, you know, condolences. What is the word?
Condolences. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's not. So what if he did it? It sucks. But to be fair, Mark was one of these guys. Marky was always exposing himself to these races. I mean, he would do the Southern 100. He would go and travel around, do all these Irish races, I believe. And that's quite a commitment to, you know, put yourself in harm's way. It's something that I am not brave enough to do. I don't go around doing, you know, multiple road races a year. I do the Macau Grand Prix, which has got a pretty good safety record. I think we've lost one guy in the 13 times I've been. You know, we had one fatality and a couple injuries. But all these little Irish road races, these are mass starts in the rain.
Right, right. Yep.
And it's like, what? So one of the things that I was a little intrigued to find out a little later today was where Mark crashed at the Northwest 200 racetrack today. And it was going into one of these little short roundabouts, which is fairly low speed.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the big roundabout after the bridge. It was early on in the lap when you kind of climbed uphill through the village. And then it's a weird place, and I'm only guessing. I believe it was wet. And one of the things that came to mind, because he was on one of these Aprilias, one of the team Aprilias that I've ridden.
So, yeah, he was on last year's bike, right?
Well, he was on a Stalker. I don't know if it was last year's bike or not. I believe they're identical. But when I crashed at Knock Hill in the rain, it was from the thing coming around on me on the brakes in the wet. And it never felt right as I was sliding around, trying to slide around. I couldn't get the thing to back it in. I couldn't get the weight off the front, you know, in the wet or the dry. I never did feel kind of comfortable backing the Aprilia before into the corners like the Hondas or whatever, like the Suzukis I've ridden. And sure enough, you know, after it got a bit more wet, the thing absolutely just came out from underneath me with no warning whatsoever. I wasn't even like backing it in the rain, which, you know, is a nice thing to do sometimes to kind of feel it out. And it just snapped around and just threw me right off onto the ground. Like I just spun out from underneath me. And I'm wondering if that's what happened to Mark today, because this long chassis with the short swing arm, I don't know. I'm not blaming the Aprilia, but I'm just wondering if the thing kind of caught him out like it caught me out so unexpectedly in the rain at Knock Hill.
I guess at a certain point, and I really hadn't chased down any specific details, but there'll probably be a bit of an inquiry. I'm sure there were going to be marshals there, and they probably saw what happened. A sad occurrence all around. I mean, some of the pictures that our buddy Dave was posting, I'm like, oh man, you know, great remembrances. I never was lucky enough. I don't believe to meet him. Was he at the TT last year?
I'm sure he was.
Don't remember meeting him, but sounds like you guys were close and tight friends. And so, real drag. But
he's just one of these guys that, you know, when you first meet him, even like in 2006 or seven, whenever I first met him, didn't know him from anything. And you'd see him in the pub late at night, you know, when everybody's really pissed drunk, and just the nicest guy. Like he just would just, you know, fall into his smile and his demeanor, and his everything was just like, it became all hugs and, you know, we're all just, isn't this fun that we get to be here and isn't this great? And it's, you know, he's very infectious. He's a one in a million, truly like one of the unique riders in the paddock that it always has said, you know, why do the good ones have to go? He was certainly one of the uniquely nice guys around. Cool. And that's what, you know, it's also hard. I mean, nobody deserves to crash in these things, but of all the people, I mean, it's a little bit surreal that he was my teammate this year. And I was really looking forward to, you know, having a teammate on the similar equipment and a good rider and also a good friend that we could, you know, compare some data and go out later and have a drink after. It just sucks all around. The whole thing sucks.
Yeah. It's a weird thing about this sport. And even though I don't participate myself anymore, even covering it still provides opportunities for you to get close to riders. And I'm always freaked when somebody that I know has issues or worse. And that certainly happened in the history and time span of this show. You got to get on.
What also sucks, I'll say, is what's interesting because it's so fresh is now Mark, my mate, has been relegated from being my friend to one of the mentions amongst others that has now become one of the friends I've lost doing this.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird to change that. It's almost like you have to change his title from one of my cool mates that I drink and, you know, I drink with and have a great time with and love to bits to, yeah, I've lost some friends, you know, on the Isle of Man, or I've lost some friends real road racing or something. It's like, fuck, I don't want him to be in that category.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Well, I think part of it is, we're mere hours off of the occurrence. And so there's going to be just a little bit of still coming to terms. And I'm not sure how you said you were good friends with his pop. So I'm assuming you're going to be talking to them at some point.
I don't know if they're going to come to the TT. I would highly doubt it. But I've got a quick note, you know, a quick note from the team owner, and it seems like everything's on and everything's good to go for the TT still so far. You know, hasn't been any big announcement that there wouldn't be an effort as planned for my side of the tent, which, you know, we've still got to go out there and do our best. And it'll be on our for mine for sure.
Good. Well, maybe an impetus to give it that little extra for Mark.
Yeah, and be safe and
yeah, that too.
Be smooth.
You know, absolutely.
Not push something that doesn't work, especially with a situation that doesn't seem to work easily for almost anybody. So, you know, we don't want to go out there and push something that just simply isn't working right.
You know, it was, I'm not sure if you caught last week's show, but I had a chat with James Whittam afterwards when we were talking about the Prillers and about the swing arms and about how the thing had a tendency to wheelie out of a lot of corners and, as you say, more difficult to back in than some, and how some of the teams were doing it. And he's like, yeah, a lot of people are struggling with it. I mean, Eugene Laverty got a 16th and a DNF last week at Donington, basically his home circuit. It's like, huh.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm not really sure what it is. Like we've talked about, you ride the thing as hard as you can, and you're 4 seconds off from the year before on a BMW. You know, it's just like, what is that?
Yeah.
I can't explain it.
All right. What else is going on? I guess we could chat about Stoner. Boy, that thing's been talked about a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm on the fence with that. I'm not really sure what to think. I mean, on one side, when he first starts saying, you know, I'd like to get out of this because I'm a little bit, you know, I've been there, done that. And I understand what that's like going around in circles. One of the reasons why I started doing the real roads is because just riding around in the short circuits becomes pretty tedious.
Yeah.
And repetitious. And certainly on his scale, which is 10 times more than I'd ever dream of, you know, he's been doing it since he was a little kid and been in Europe the whole time and come on all the way up and won, you know, MotoGP races and more. And I can see how you just kind of go, you know what, I'm only 26, but I don't feel like I'm that young. You know, I've been doing this for long and it's getting old. And plus all the politics and all the bullshit. And I agree, you know, the CRT thing, in a perfect world where people have a bit of money to spend, I'm all prototype, you know, like MotoGP should be an exclusive scene. And to have these, you know, Honda-powered, BMW-powered chassis, I mean, with different chassis, like, God, that's the worst. It's like kissing your sister. Like, you love your sister, but, you know, you don't want to kiss her. But I agree with him what he's saying. But then they follow up with some extra questions, and he starts whining about this lactose thing and the press being unfair. And that just opens him up. That vulnerability just makes it worse. And if he wants to complain about MotoGP not being as interesting or fun, or the press being negative about him, he has a certain amount of power there to change that. And, you know, it's not really his moral obligation to be the single entity that changes it around, but at least he can't sort of feed the fire for people to call him a little bitch because he keeps whining 3 years later about the same press and the same lactose bullshit. It's like, well, just get on with it, dude. You know, so there's two sides of it. I like the guy. He seems smart, and he's definitely fast. But the other side, he always ends up bumming me out before the end of the press conference.
It would have been quite interesting if he had stolen your term and said, you know, I'm just not happy with my shitty little world of racing anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. And a couple of my friends have been saying, you know, when the money runs out before he's 40, he'll wish he had kept going. But, you know, it's funny.
There's a lot of people that are saying, hey, he may be – there's people are saying he this is like a shot across the bow for Dorna. And maybe he's just trying to push them to go in one direction. I don't think this ship is going to change course, frankly, not right now. Because the bottom line is, Mark, there is no money. Until bike sales start picking up, the manufacturers have an incentive to – invest in the series, we're going to be heading down this path, and you never know, you might see World Superbike go to something more like BSB with the Evo bikes.
I don't know if it's changing around. My sponsor of leathers and helmets and boots and gloves, Joe Rocket, has reported increased in sales across the last few, you know, several months. And so has new motorcycle sales, in at least in America, has gone up. So I think it might be turning around, but I don't know. I mean, who am I to know about what Honda can afford and what they can't? I mean, Honda's got three. Do they still have three bikes or two?
Well, they've got three factory bikes, one of which is – well, pseudo factory bikes, one of which is with Brattle, and then one other one which is – I'm blanking right now. I do that quite often. but
they have two Repsols, and then they have Brattle and
yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
And interestingly enough, today in FP3 – De Pugnet on the Aspar Aprilia-powered bike was ahead of Brattle on the LCR.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good race for him, yeah?
That's a good point. He is French. But, I mean, that's been probably the quickest bike, that one. And Colin's bike, a bunch of that is strictly due to Colin, who, as we know, is out, and they brought in Christopher Mullen, who's been at the bottom of the charts the whole time, but he hasn't been riding much lately. And of course it's a new to him bike. Did you catch any of the free practices yet? To be honest, I still haven't watched FP3 or QP today, and that's on my list of things to do.
I only watched MotoGP qualifying and some of the press conferences stuff. I didn't watch anything else.
Okay.
But it's on tomorrow, so I'm now in European time, so hopefully I'll be able to use one of these this new app that I have on my iPad where you can watch them live. I've missed two races being, you know, sleeping through the live feed in California, but hopefully tomorrow I'll see it.
Yeah, when Jules and I went to Sears Point a couple of weekends ago for the AMA race, we came back on to crash at his place on Saturday night. I slept for about 4 hours. He woke me up at 3 a.m. when we got up and started watching MotoGP.
Crack a beer, no doubt.
No comment. Well, and then we had to turn around and go back to Sears Point to cover all the races on Sunday. So it was, needless to say, it was a long weekend. And this week I'm driving off at the Thursday or Friday with Chuck Forker, you know Chuck, to Utah for World Superbike. So. I'll definitely be keeping an eye on you guys. When does practice start?
Well, it starts, I think, Saturday or Sunday. I believe I'm not on till Monday because the first day is newcomers and super twins or lightweights or some weird things I'm not riding. So the Moto Sys bike seemed to have just the smallest little leak of a photo, and I thought it was actually backwards. And then Veronique said, no, that's the seat. That would be facing backwards. So they've definitely got some aero tidbits on there that'll be unique to see, to look at.
Well, I don't know if you can call it a leak when it's posted by the Moto Sys Twitter account.
Yeah, but it's such a benign, you know, abstract photo. It's just
it's a tight
crop on just one little thing. But you can see there's some kind of a winglet, like Formula One cars, you know, something going on. But if it's behind my knee, I guess that exits my boot or my shin, and then it takes up that and tries.
Have you seen it yet?
Some kind of laminar. No, I haven't seen anything.
Okay.
I have not seen the Moto Sys bike, whether it be drawings or photos, other than that one photo.
Is the team on island yet? Or
no, I doubt it.
Okay,
I wouldn't think so. Although my leathers have shipped from Korea a couple days ago, so I've been tracking that, you know, with anticipation to see what those little C3 Prio wiring looks like.
Yeah, I want to see that. I want to see that. By the time the show comes around later this week. Perhaps you'll have posted an image of it and we'll include that in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, it's just easy. You know, some simple stuff. It's fun.
Oh, it is cool. I actually like the female version of it better. Remember that image?
Yeah. It's cool to see a girl. Speaking of females, it's nice to be back with her, you know, several weeks, and so nice, dude. Like having a pretty girl in your arm.
Yeah. Besides all the ones you got back in LA.
We won't talk about. We won't tell her about those.
Oh, Vero, you were so patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what are your plans between now and the rest of the week? You, I'm assuming, get some hydrate, get some good food in you. Chill out.
Get laid. Stay out of jail. There was. On and off again, some some talk about going to Alton Park for a test with Hopkinson and the team, at least one extra bike. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think we're going to end up going to Derby. So that means I've got another week to acclimate, and I will be eating better than I've eaten this weekend because we've kind of just let our hair down. But start losing a little bit weight, just trimming up, do some cardio and some, you know, build some lower back strength and some hands and strength. Yeah. And stuff. It's just, you know.
Derby's airport circuit. Is you've run there before?
I've been there before. I don't think I've ever actually done a lap on it, but I've been there for like shifter cart races and to watch other people go around in circles. Oh, wait, maybe I did. Yes, I did, but it was only the straightaway. That's what it was.
All right. So
we were there scrubbing some tires.
Could be something fun, a little different. I mean, it's not like you're going, you know, 11 tenths there.
Not at all. It would just be basically to check the positions of the foot pegs and the handlebars and the levers. And,
I do remember, and you, I know you listened to the talk that I had with Michael Siz, he did say both bikes were quote unquote identical. So that'll be nice to have, something where you can actually compare across the board between yourself and Michael Rutter's, experience with the bike.
Yeah. I think this will be terribly interesting, at least for those involved, with my teammate on the exact bike starting first and me second, 10 seconds behind him, and then McGinnis will be third, 10 seconds behind me, and I think Hillier is next to maybe Lightning. This will be an interesting chess match because I could go flat out to get back behind Rutter and let him tow me around in the draft. And at that point, if McGinnis can't hold the pace, I would win even if I stayed behind Rutter, or I would run out of juice from having used the juice to get the 10 seconds from second to first, or McGinnis will come by and go flying by me before I catch Rutter, and I'll tow him. I'm sorry, he'll tow me up to Rutter, then we'll both pass Rutter, and he'll get first, I'll get second, and Rutter will get third.
Or
do the same thing and let the other guys try too hard and run out of juice, and I'll just win the whole thing. Or I could end up seventh, and three other completely unknown, it could be Kingston University winning it, and McGinnis third, and Hillier second with a ZX7 with a gearbox. So it's going to be interesting, at least for those inside this little circle of electric bike racing. This will be the very first truly competitive. And Agni's brought in three bikes. I mean, like, I don't know what they expect to do. But
anyway, so yeah, it'll be interesting having Rutter on the same bike and the strategy that I might adopt. I don't know what to do in practice, whether I should hold my cards – secret, or should I go after him in the very first practice and just try to get up to his ass and see what happens, or should I just do my own thing and see where it puts me compared to him? I don't know.
I think what you need to do in at least – how many practices do you get?
I think it's only two laps total.
Shit. So it's not like you can go out and experiment and see how you know, just what the limits of power are.
Well, if I go flat out to try to test what would happen if I go catch up to Rutter on the straightaways and then draft him around, and then I run out with 20 laps to go, you know, I mean 20 corners to go, I'll be sitting on the side of the track for hours waiting to get back, and I'll be completely out of the game, meaning on the day, which is not a big deal, but it doesn't show where I would be gauged against the rest of their best attempts. So I don't really want to just go and do something stupid and run out of juice even in practice, because then I won't know where I'm at. If I do my own thing completely independent and just read the gauges and do whatever the team has instructed me to do on my own and not worry about Rutter or McGinnis, and just as a first gauge to see where I am, if I just follow the computer and I don't do anything other things strategically, I just follow the computer's advice, I don't know. I mean, should I risk it and go after Rutter? Should I wait until fucking McGinnis catches me and then draft him up to Rutter? It's a chess match. It's interesting. It's actually, I don't really know how it's going to pan out. But I will tell you this, Jim, if that's your real name. Dude, if I can win the thing, I'd be stoked. And it's not going to be easy. But if I do, it would be one of the cooler things I've ever done for me.
Well, I mean, seriously, being in a racing sandwich between Michael Rutter and John McGinnis is nice in itself.
Well, unless you flounder and actually expose yourself to a complete piece of shit after. You know, you're on the same bike as Rutter, but he finishes 14 seconds ahead of you. That would suck.
That didn't happen last year, and you had the inferior bike.
Well, I don't know. He caught up. I mean, anything can happen, you know, and these guys are coming off the Northwest 200, so they'll be up to speed. I'm not too worried about the lack of practice. I think the Northwest 200 is good in some ways, and also it exposes you to, you know, ruining, wearing out the equipment or stubbing your toe and not being able to race the TT. It's cold and rain. And, dude, raining on a mass start? Fuck that.
No, I know. I know.
I'm not afraid. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I watched some of the streaming from it Friday. I haven't caught anything from it today. I'm actually just very impressed with not only the balls that these guys have, but how much more advanced tire technology has gotten with the reins. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, until you just get that one little tiny or that one little stripe of paint and you crash in the reins so suddenly. You know, you just go, oh, it's all good, man. Oh, I'm getting confidence. And you go, fuck. And you just, God damn it. You know, and you lose it. Like 200 miles, 180 miles an hour drafting somebody with a rooster tail of water in your face is pretty hairball. I mean, I'm just, maybe 20 years ago when I was 8 years old, I could have done it. But I don't know. At this age, I don't got that kind of balls.
I saw in the Super Twins race, Rutter make a pass. I think it was Super Twins or it might have been the Superstock race. Rutter make a pass in the wet, going into that little roundabout that you're talking about, over a painted area that must have been 50 meters long by 5 meters wide, and the bike was just swoosh, 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 swoosh all the way through, and damned if he didn't pull it off. And, and it looked like he was going in there way too hot, and he got the thing down to speed, and I'm like, there's no way he's going to make the corner. He made the corner.
See, that's the biggest fear, is that it suck you in to your adrenaline and your competitive nature. Once you're there, you kind of can't help yourself. I mean, like Stoner was saying in his press conference on Thursday or Friday, he says, I'll still finish out the season. I mean, I can't help myself. Like, if I'm on the bike, I'm going to, you know, it'll take over. My competitive nature will take over, and I'll still give it 100%, even knowing I'm going to retire. Yeah. Which I believe him. You know, I think that a guy that's that good and that dedicated to winning is – he would not be able to slow himself down for the sake of his new family if racing in the rain against other guys on the exact same tires and bikes. Like, you're just going to try to win. And that's what scares me, is trying too hard and just punting a roundabout like Marky did, you know?
I read a very interesting comment on a Brit board that I frequent, Brit forum. And this person said, if I were Jorge, the thing that I would do first off would be to start showing him a bunch of wheels and see how he reacts.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see if he's still got the medal. But clearly he does. In FP3, he was quickest, and he was second in qualifying. The Yamahas were 3, 4, 5, 6 behind him. And so it will be interesting. It does turn silly season on its head a bit. It was a seat that wasn't expected to necessarily be available for this coming year. So we'll have to see. Listen, I know it's getting late for you there, brother. Let's try and talk, say, next week sometime, after you've got a little bit of time under your belt, and see what you think, and I can get your impressions then of the Motosiz Aero stuff, which I'm very, very curious about. I'm sure I'll have seen the spy photos from then, the full-size shot ones. And I wish you best of luck, and make sure you have a bit of a relaxing week between now and then, and tell Vero that I miss her.
Jim misses you.
We miss you too.
I know. Dave was giving me hella shit for not coming over. I'm like,
right.
Yeah. Well, you guys make sure that Dave takes care and help him up every curb like a 80-year-old woman.
Especially after he twists his ankle walking up on a sidewalk or some silly bullshit.
Yep.
This guy is so prone to hurting himself. It's just hilarious.
All right. Well, you guys, where's just for our listeners out there, because there will be a bunch of them, if they want to drop by and say hello to you in the paddock, where is your setup going to be?
I believe it would be in the A paddock, probably on the first row across from Taz or H and Plant or whoever, Legends, or we'll be on the first row with the big truck. So just stop by.
About the same place as last year?
Yeah, I don't know, but certainly it's in the neighborhood. I will be running Freddie Spencer's number 19 for all the Aprilia stuff.
Nice.
Right?
Well done. Mm. You don't get a lot of choice, but it's still kind of cool.
It's fine. I think it's great.
Yeah. All right, brother. Be good. Thank you for chatting with me, and we will talk soon.
All right. Sorry if I feel a little lethargic. I've had a rough day.
Yeah, I can understand.
Okay, Doc. Take it easy, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
So thanks, Jim, and thanks, Mark, and some sobering thoughts, some good thoughts. Yes, let's close this out.
Yep.
Anything else to talk about? You want to talk about the Wales ambulance?
Yeah, we've there's this little thing on for Wales or ambulance. This is really for UK-based people because you need a UK postcode. There's a specifically Welsh, it's called the People's Postcode Lottery, and people play this lottery game and they accumulate money and they've got £15,000 to give away to one of the nominated charities. And so if people go to www.votethatcounts.org, O-R-G, votethatcounts.org, yeah, then there's a drop-down menu. You have to put your details in, but you need a UK postcode to be able to vote. And right at the bottom of the drop-down menu is Wales or Ambulance. And this runs till the 22nd of June. So if people could go there and vote, if you see another charity you think, no, that's closer to my heart, then do, they're all great charities, so do by all means vote for those. But if we can, £15,000 is 10 free missions for us. It could make a huge difference. And for people who support their local air ambulance in England, you won't be damaging your own air ambulance because this is just for Welsh charities. And there's one air ambulance in Wales. So that'd be great. Thanks, guys. And we'll come back to bike racing now. And right. You guys have a great time at Miller. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You know, it's not a fantastic track, but it is a fantastic location.
Yeah.
Those visually,
snow covered mountains.
There's,
in the
there's
back,
a lot of Mormons
just,
there. And, you know.
No. Yeah. No, it is. You see the bikes going around, and some of the photographs that you see each year from it with snow-capped mountains in the background, you just think, wow, what a dramatic backdrop. And we've had some great races there.
Yeah, yeah, we have. Well, not last year, but yeah, we have.
Yeah, yeah, it seems to favour the Ducatis and the Aprilias, so it'll be interesting to see how the Kawasaki does this year, that they're doing so well. But it's quite an abrasive track, isn't it, because of the dust. Doesn't it do a bit of a number on tyres?
Yeah, we talked to a lot of riders last year. We had Johnny Ray, Tom Sykes. Actually, it was funny because Johnny Ray and Ruben Chaus were just livid about the abrasiveness and the bumps on the track as well. Whereas Tom Sykes actually said, yeah, you know, it's not the worst I've been at.
Okay, well, we will look forward to watching the races and hearing you and Jim next week with what should be a pretty good show because you always do a great job of getting some interesting interviews.
It'll be interesting to see when we can actually get the show out because we're not coming back until Tuesday for myself, and I think Jim won't be back until Wednesday, so it might be tricky to get everything out by – we may have a late show, basically.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah. We can always add bits the week after as well.
Right, yep.
Super stuff. Okay. Thanks, Jules.
Well, great.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, it was good talking to you.
Best of luck to Jim making his way to by road. Jules and the other, what did he say? The other spoiled kids going by air. And we'll speak very soon.
Excellent. All right. You have a good day, man.
And you do. Cheers.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good. You're taking it for us?
I am. She's here. Say hello.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, beautiful.
How are you doing?
I've been pretty good. Thank you. And yourself? Okey-doke, that looks good. That looks good. Levels look fine. All right. 3, 2, 1.